Deborah, with her 30 years of being an entrepreneur and creating over 7 companies, knows exactly what it means to accept the mission. When you make that decision, when you accept the mission to become a solopreneur, to take yourself and your talents to market, then you embrace a life of not only unlimited possibilities, but also the unknown. It's an elixir of fear and bravery that only someone who's taken the leap really understands. On our show, Deb digs deep with her guest to highlight what you, the listener, wants to know. The stories, the whys, and the hows to navigate the journey to success. Get ready to hear from some of the most incredible mission takers from Generation Z to Boomers. So sit up, perk up, and get ready to be blown away. Now here is your host, Deborah Drummond.
Welcome back to an incredible episode that we have in store for you. I am so grateful for technology today, even more so. I can't wait to introduce you to my friend from the beautiful country of Ireland. But first, let me welcome you to the show. This might be the first time you've decided to go, mission accepted, click. What are these guys all about, right? Well, if you read what we're about, it really is about taking on the mission of life, particularly the type of mission that happens to entrepreneurs and creatives and people in media, anyone that has decided to take on the quest of self-fulfilling your dreams and aspirations around your career or your passion or your sport or what have you. Because look at, sometimes when you see those entrepreneurs out there or people doing those things that you're, you know, that you're watching their podcasts or listening to what it is that they're doing on YouTube in the morning, they decided to take on that mission. And how we all get to that place is not necessarily the same. Not everybody woke up and went, oh, I know exactly what I meant to do. Let me just go brave up and go do it. Sometimes it happens by accident. We're accidental entrepreneurs. We could have our back against the wall and someone gives us an opportunity and we have no choice but to jump off the cliff. Everybody's story is so different. But I think what's really interesting is when you get into that depth of that conversation and realize, why do we keep doing this to ourselves? Why do we keep taking it on? If you're a parent, you don't have a choice. You know what I mean? They're there. You're not shipping them out for more than, you know, a few hours a day, maybe. But when you take it on as a career, it's just incredible. And it has so many times where you can go left, but you go right. Some of the best mistakes have been the best answers and all that good stuff. And that's what we discover on this show, particularly at this new time, every generation is stepping into the world of entrepreneurship, which is why we talk a lot about the Gen Z generation. And really the goal is to bring those generations together, because I know, as many of you do know, that I have an 18-year-old that's embarking, and many colleagues that I know have their teenagers embarking in entrepreneurship. And we know that they have great skills in some areas, but we also know that those of us that are seasoned, you know what it's like to cut a deal by shaking someone's hand. We know what it's like to communicate so much more. We are going to go into one form of communication today, which I think isn't talked enough about, and I'm so excited. That's what Joseph's going to do here. So anyways, bringing the generations together. And so look, I want to thank you. You guys are just like the best audience ever. You share, you post. I get things from all over the place saying, hey, I saw your podcast. Someone sent it to me. And that's exactly what we want you to do. If you haven't subscribed yet, hit the red button. We want to inspire you. Honestly, it's up to twice a week now, I think, that we're sending out some really great stuff. So look, I want to introduce Joseph. It's his show today, not mine. And this is the beautiful thing that happens when you are an entrepreneur. I actually traveled to his gorgeous country because I was talking about, a lot of you know that I really endorse a line of products. And I was there sharing this line of products with this beautiful country that was going to be able to take advantage of this opportunity. It was ground floor. And me and my girlfriend, oh my gosh, we were flying around, we were driving around, and we were at this gorgeous, beautiful vegetarian lunch buffet place. And I'm sure he remembers the name more than I do, but I can see the picture of the door. And he was there as a friend to a friend that was listening to what it is that we were doing. Laura, right? Laura was the connecting piece. And we got to talking afterwards, and he shared with me that he wrote this book on something that I had heard about, but I thought was really only for like the police forces, you know, or people that were really investigators. And but it actually is a massive, beautiful form of communication that helps so many people be able to communicate, articulate, do business. And it really, I brought the book home and I read it feverishly, and I was like, oh, I'm going to be able to find out when my friends aren't telling me the truth, you know? You're probably wondering, what the heck are you talking about? So I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to introduce Joseph McGuire. Joseph, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much, Deborah. Absolute delight to be here.
Absolutely. So people are going, what the heck are you talking about, crazy lady? So please tell us, what is it this guy does?
In simple terms, I read people's faces. I work with an ancient Chinese tradition. It's a 3,000-year-old tradition. And the understanding is that our static facial features reveal a huge amount of information about who we are, where we come from in terms of our how we grew up, our parental and ancestral influences, our communication style, our behavior style, personality traits, stress triggers and responses, and a lot more besides. So I've been using that. I've also studied body language in considerable depth. I've done a lot of online work with some former FBI trainers. So I'm reading a lot of what people aren't saying or don't realize they're saying before they even speak.
And so when people hear that, it's exciting and makes you nervous, right? I mean, I remember when Joseph and I sat down at this cafe and I was like, oh my God, he's going to be able to tell that I'm super tired on this trip. Or, you know, it's kind of like when you first sit down to someone who's maybe psychic or intuitive or what have you, and the fear is that they're going to see things that you don't see, but it doesn't work that way. I think the more that I got to understand what Joseph was doing was just being able to have a better understanding so that you can serve that person better. I mean, isn't that really truly what we want to do? Is we want to be able to communicate with those people that we care about and that we're doing business about, and putting them at ease so that you can, you know, serve what it is that they're needing, even if they're not able to express it. That's kind of where I got to the heart of what your work is. So, tell me, you know, I know you talked about that you studied, How did you fall into this, or how did this come to you? I think that's an important piece of the story.
Yeah, I did fall into it. There was no plan. I was reading people as a small child, but I couldn't have told you what I was doing. I just intuitively knew stuff about people, particularly men. Women remain a great mystery, but then they do to most men anyway. But men are simple creatures. I probably shouldn't say that, but men are simple, straightforward creatures, easy to read. But I moved to London at one stage. I happened to be in a conversation at another vegetarian restaurant. And I just sat down opposite a guy. He basically told me he was there for a course. He'd come over from Denmark. A man came by the table. My new friend called him over and pointed to me and said, this guy wants to do the course. And part of the course was facial diagnosis. So once I was introduced to that, it was just like light bulbs going off everywhere. And I studied for 4.5 years living in London, and I was working with one of my teachers in his health food store. So anytime somebody would come in, he'd ask, what's his condition? What's her condition? So it was like just full on immersion. So I'd come home. It was just, it allowed me to put a structure on what I was really doing. And the ancient Chinese system was always with the understanding that the mind and the body are one inseparable unit anyway. So it was always about looking at people as opposed to, you know, liver, heart, kidneys, whatever it was. And then as I got more, I've been doing this for pretty much 40 years at this stage, but the more I've done it and the more I've worked on myself and realized I had a lot to learn about myself as well, because the mirror doesn't lie. The more I realize that what I'm really about is helping to bring out the best in people, helping people to communicate more and more effectively in both the personal and the professional lives. So my emphasis is really on helping people build exceptional relationships. Like you mentioned law enforcement there. I don't work with law enforcement in any capacity, because to be honest, when I worked as a therapist, I had a lot of clients who worked in that, in the legal field, and sometimes even ex-prisoners. And I realized there's just too much darkness there. So I won't go there. So it's really about helping people. And I realized everybody, no matter how successful they are, has some degree of insecurity about who and how and what they are. So I'm helping people to transcend that, I guess, and bring out the best in themselves. Because my idea is that everybody has a diamond inside themselves, and most of us need that diamond to be shone, to be polished. I've certainly needed my own, you know, with a lot of polishing, I can assure you. But it's really about helping people bring that out and shine in the world, but not in an arrogant way, but just in really accepting themselves and accepting that they, yeah, that we all have something very special to bring to the table, whatever that may be.
That's beautiful. And so when you say that you, so I know that you work with people personally, and I know professionally, and professionally, obviously, I get much clearer. I've had the pleasure of hearing you speak before. I know that you've come and talked to an incredible team that I'm part of, and I get to know it more. So when you talk about your years of being able and everyone finding that diamond, what does that look like? So it's just a new part of me discovering what it is that you do. Is it kind of one-on-one? Do you have things in a group? I mean, share how that comes to be.
Sure. Okay. Well, the one-to-one is really where I'm more focused on bringing out the diamond, because then I'm getting really into the personal side. I'm getting into some very, very deep stuff, because people, like my business, as you can see, is called Clear Sight Communications, because people don't realize just how much information is revealed literally clear sight. And when I'm working with an individual, then I can go in very, very deeply. I've learned to be diplomatic. I think I'm naturally empathetic anyway. So, but I'm really, I would say, empathetically helping them explore what's in the way of them really shining. And a lot of that at this stage is goes beyond the structures I've learned. It's very much intuitive. So there's a huge emphasis on, how can I put it? Resonating with the individual and tuning into where they're at the time and where they can be. It's seeing people's potential and helping them to see that much more clearly. Whereas with a team, particularly in a business setting, you can't really, because that would be invasive in most cases. So with the teamwork, I'm really helping people recognize each other's communication patterns, to a degree helping them, the individuals, bring out more of their strengths to communicate more confidently and more effectively. But it's really helping the team recognize how to communicate with each other, because there's so much miscommunication and misunderstanding in particularly in business organizations, in teams, which impacts on performance, which impacts on client relationship, which impacts on morale, etc. And there's so many simple tips I can give people that help people realize, oh, I was doing this, but he or she needs to actually hear it that other way. So it's helping people make simple adjustments that really impact in a huge way on performing much more positively.
And correct me if I'm mistaken, but that's really by being able to read the structure and read the, maybe give us some more of that, because for people to be like, well, that's interesting. I mean, everybody looks differently. People have different personalities, and I'm in this sales group, or I work in a real estate office, or I'm in corporate, or I'm the bank teller, and then I have a manager, and I don't feel like I'm on equal footing. But tell people, maybe give us an idea of what you mean by being able to read structure and sure, be able to interpret it. Yeah.
Okay. Every aspect, every part of the facial structure is reveals something about the person, and different angles, shapes, sizes, etc. So, for example, if you just over the last couple of years, many of us have grown used to seeing people with masks on. So, even if you're just seeing the upper section of the face, that's still very revealing, and particularly the eyes and the eyebrows tell you so much. So, if you look at basic eyebrow shapes, if the eyebrow shape is pretty much straight across, if the main body of the eyebrow is straight across, these are people who think very rationally. They're very analytical by nature. So if you're speaking to them, if you're looking to communicate with them, you need to present the information in a very logical, linear manner. Whereas if the eyebrow is more curved, then you need to connect with them as a person, even in a business context, because they are very people-centered. If the eyebrows then are more pointed down towards the inner corner, or if they're more like an inverted V shape, they're more autocratic. So they expect to be obeyed and they expect you to respond quickly. So you have to interact with them in a way that's quick, punchy, to the point, very, very, very snappy. A couple of other things on eyebrows. If the eyebrows naturally sit down close to the eyes, like for example Mitt Romney in the US, these are people whose mouths often operate faster than the brain. So they process information very quickly, and they're often quite impatient. So they will often be thinking, you say something or you ask them a question, and they're already thinking what you're going to say next, and presuming they know what you're going to say next. So you'll often need to keep bringing them back to the point. And one other one on eyebrows: if you're talking to somebody and the eyebrows then drop, they've stopped listening. So many people have a habit, particularly in sales, of continuing to talk. But if the eyebrows drop down, they've stopped listening. So if you miss that point, you've lost them completely. So that's when they're telling you, it's my turn to speak.
What a great segue into how to be able to be your best person, like how to be the best person showing up on how to serve someone in business. So, I mean, maybe give us a story or talk to us a little bit about that. I'm sure that that is a lot of the work that you do, is work with people I talked about this last night to my sales team. Every time you sharpen your axe, you know, when you sharpen your axe and you get better and you bring more skills to the table as a person in business, even, you know, person in your life, but as a person in business, the better the process goes, the easier your business goes for you, and honestly, for your customer. You can,
that's it.
Yeah. So share with us. I don't know if you have a story, or when people hire you, what do they hire you for? Like, what do they say to you? Hey, can you come help me read faces? Like, how does the conversation go?
Okay. I work primarily through referral relationship. I'm all about building relationship. And because of what I do, I kind of have to work under the radar a bit. So when I'm brought in, for example, to sit in on an interview, I'm introduced as a colleague or an associate, or if I'm involved in the negotiation, they're not told, the people across the table are not told exactly who I am or what I'm there for, logically enough. So if typically in an interview situation, they would have two or more candidates and they can't quite decide between them. So I would be brought in to read what's really the real person behind the CV, behind the interview skills, because a lot of people are very polished at interviews. So I'm looking for red flags. I may or may not speak in an interview, but if I do, it's usually to alert the interviewer or the panel to something you really need to pay attention to here, because this isn't ringing true. Obviously in the negotiation, it's a different scenario because I'm reading, again, the people across the table, and I'm reporting, like when we have a break during the session, I'm saying, oh, this is the person. There may be a team across the table and this person may be doing all the speaking, but it's the guy to the left or the woman to the right that is really the one making the decisions. So there's a lot of stuff like that. I also work from photographs. Like one particular one comes to mind where when I'm working from a photograph, I stipulate I do not receive any information other than the photograph. No name, no position, nothing, because I want to come to it as blank as possible and as unbiased as possible. But there's one that really jumps out was I was sent a photograph. It was from an executive coach I worked with, and he had reached an impasse with the client, and that's typically when the photos arrive. And what I saw on the photo was that the guy had he overestimated his own intelligence. Difficulty paying attention to detail, and he was really reluctant to delegate. When I sent the profile back, a written profile, I was told that the guy was the CEO's protege. He had recently been appointed chief auditor of a significant financial institution here in Dublin, and he had almost lost them their license to trade because of an oversight. And it was just one of his subordinates spotted it literally on Christmas Eve, spotted it on time and saved the company. When the CEO saw the profile, he said, yeah, that's spot on what I thought the guy would change.
These are really important pieces to someone's business, whether you own a large business or not. When you're looking at hiring someone to take over a part of what you do, that interview process is so challenging, because like you said, you can go online and find out like how to write the most polished you know, the most polished business. And, you know, when I think about us having this conversation and I've had a relationship with you for a long time, I just did a business dealing with someone that I was in. I didn't know which direction to take. And oh, I wish your name had popped into my head, because I went and talked to a colleague of mine in the same industry. We researched this person through LinkedIn. We were looking at their connections. They seemed very strong in the industry. They were very, and something, and I was able to negotiate what they wanted down almost to the price where it made me nervous. I was like, your value that you're telling me. And sure enough, I did the deal. And I've been completely ghosted, and so has gone my money. Now, this just happened recently in the last couple of weeks. And as I'm sitting here going, okay, Miss Deborah, you've known Joseph for a number of years now. Why didn't you think of that? Because it's, you know, so lesson learned, right? Lesson learned, but very interesting. Even when you're in that decision-making mode, other than hiring somebody, doing business with somebody, going into a company with somebody, those decisions require research. And honestly, having someone like yourself being able to barometer back, it may not be the full picture because you've got other pieces that you're taking into it, right? When you're interviewing somebody, but it doesn't matter if you're hiring somebody even as a virtual assistant 10 hours a week. Like those 10 hours a week, that time you invest into somebody, because we all know you hire people and some excel and some don't, and or some why, and then if there's a way you can fix it or not or what have you. But oh my gosh, what a pivotal, I'm having my own moment here, Joseph, of Deb, you silly girl, right? And it cost me a lot of money and a lot of frustration. So I can just see it from when you were talking there, realizing how critical it would be to have someone's insight. And, you know, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, if you get the wrong person, it can be a very expensive mistake, and the ripples can spread in so many different directions. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, like, I don't just look and none of us do, actually. None of us just look and or just listen. Our bodies are also like antennae. The whole body is an antenna. And we talk about gut feeling, gut instinct, and paying attention to that is very, very important. So paying attention to gut health is also very important. Like there's, you know, the old saying that you are what you eat. Well, mm-hmm. to an extent, it's true, but there's also you are how you eat. You are how and what you absorb. But that doesn't just apply on a physical level. So it's keeping our gut health clean, and it's doing whatever we need to relax, take care of ourselves, so that when we get that good feeling, we know which is the right one and we're paying attention to that. And then we're looking for the evidence as well. So we've got all these systems working together. And then when the more clarity we have, the less biased we are, and the more we're not likely to second guess ourselves.
Well, I think that's the important piece. It was like, you know, for me, I had some yes, some no, some this, some that, but to have someone who's not, you know, non-biased come in to be able to simply look at a picture. And when you hear the report, confirm the parts that you might be questioning, very well vested time, resource to do. So, yes, having a light bulb moment for myself. So tell us I know that you get hired to come in for teams. And you, what other things in relationship to business has been beneficial for people? Like, I'm thinking of sales agents, right? Being able to maybe give us an example there.
Yeah, again, it's like salespeople have certainly in this part of the world have a bad name, because they're associated with trying to convince people. And again, but the best salespeople are the people who build relationships, who know how to communicate, and to recognize that it's not just talking that's communication. It's how we present ourselves. It's the things like the smile. It's the ability to listen, but not just to listen to the words. It's to listen to how people are speaking, what they're not saying, gaps in the speech. Changes in tone of voice, changes in pitch, things like that, as well as the visuals. So what I'm doing when I'm working with teams is helping them to recognize, firstly, the visuals, And like obviously I mentioned the eyebrows, things like the eyes as well, because if the eyes are naturally big and open, again, you need to connect with them as a person first. So again, the best salespeople particularly are about building relationship, and they will know their clients. They will know who their clients' families are. They will know who what their interests are beyond the business bit. And they will make sure to remember those things. If the eyes are naturally very narrowed, like Donald Trump, for example, and there's no visual impairment, these are people who are much more clinical. So when you meet those in a sales setting, you do not get into the personal stuff. It's a business matter. It's a pragmatic engagement. So you stick with the facts and you don't invest yourself emotionally. You don't open yourself emotionally because they're observing you in a very, very clinical way. And their priority is to see and to know how you can benefit them. They're not particularly concerned about you. So there's a couple of very obvious, quick visual clues you can pick up there, which are very, very informative.
So how does one, you've talked about how you can read faces and how that came to you. You've talked about some examples of how it's very beneficial to understand that, particularly from a business side. I mean, I'm just seeing the time and the finance scale just really raise the bar with having someone like yourself. Talk a little bit about how that works from a personal standpoint, from an interpersonal relationship. So maybe your partner or your friendships or relationships with your children. Are you able to transfer these transfer these ideas over there?
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yes. we had the longest lockdown in Europe, in Ireland. And one of the things one of the areas of work that came to me, I wasn't looking for it, but people started approaching me about their domestic relationships because they realized they were in lockdown with people they thought they knew and loved, and realized we have a challenge or a series of challenges here. And I made it very clear I was not a relationship counselor or anything like that. But what I would do there would be arrange a Zoom call. But whoever was booking my services, they would send me photos, good facial shots of whoever they were having the challenges with. And then I would bring those up on a PowerPoint on screen. And then we would talk about their individual communication patterns and behavior styles, what their stress triggers were likely to be and how they would respond under stress, and showing them how to build bridges. So that's a lot of what the work that came over the last couple of years. I also have, I've also got friends who've been single for a time, and they will send me photos of prospective partners and ask me, yeah. You know, are there any red flags here, or you know, or obvious compatibility, or what are the obvious challenges here? So I don't look for that work, but it just kind of comes, you know, and that's kind of the fun stuff as well.
Well, yeah, because the matters of the heart are really the matters of life, right? And I know that we had a conversation after I was going through a little bit of hardship, I'll say, and I had a little surprise, you know, happen in my life, and you were like, Deb, next time, send me that person's picture. And I was like, yeah. Again, another little aha moment. It's interesting, Joseph, like getting into the details of what you do and understanding more so. And I think that your work is like that. It's a little layered, because when you hear about what you do, any counsel, there's always that. So you counsel, how do you counsel? What is the benefit and how does it work? But the deeper I get into conversation with you, the more I can see that honestly, you should be someone's counsel. Like when I think about, for me, I've been in business for, I don't know, it's 30 years now. And I grasped a really great concept. Not only is it from Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, and I know that we both understand the power of the mastermind, but there's also that person's individual counsel. And I actually just did this year. I have a couple of goals in areas of my life. And I literally drew a circle on a piece of paper that I look at each month, because your counsel can change. And I actually drew circles and put people's names of who I was going to go to counsel, who was going to be my official, whether they knew it or not, board of directors in that project that I'm working on, right? And as you're talking, I don't think there's a circle that I have written out for myself, that not having someone with your skills would be very highly advantageous. I could see absolutely how you could be of great counsel, because that type of insight is not easy to tap into. And obviously you're gifted, you've been doing this for a long time, but what a craft to bring in, and not something that we normally think about.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of the counseling side of it, if you like, is to know when you read somebody, is to know what are the right questions to ask them, to prompt them to their own answer. Because it's not about imposing anything, because it's really, as I say, it's about bringing out the best in them. How can I put it? But basically, I guess I want people to feel better about themselves for the experience of meeting me. It's not about meeting me. It's about them. It's about helping them recognize that whatever that gift is, that diamond is, and carry that forward into their, you know, into the whole, their daily being, their business life, their social life, their intimate relationships, what have you. It's that tuning into somebody to see where they're at and where they can be. Because so often, particularly nowadays, we're so busy within ourselves, within whatever's going on, that we don't have that vision for our future, that clear vision that allows us to reflect and say, oh yeah, I went a little bit off course there, or whatever, I got a bit bogged down, but this is what I'm really about, this is where I'm really going, and to come from that place of knowing, because we all know far more about who we are, our real purpose, our real depth of strength and all of that, than we tend to allow ourselves to realize. So it's helping people to recognize that within themselves, and just it's like they have this, so often people can have this, like this cathartic release. It's, I can let go of that. I can really move forward, you know? Yeah. So that's really where a lot of the joy for me comes in seeing that happen.
So when was, I have to ask, because I'm sure you've been asked this before. So there's certain traits that are expressing and showing itself due to structure and due to what you're reading. And they, let's say that they maybe not be favorable to that person. Let's say I'm coming to you for a session and I'm like, Joseph, or this keeps happening, or I notice this pattern, or I'm really going to break into this part of my business and I'm looking for advice. And you can look at me and say, well, your tendency would be, you know, this. Now, this is not my issue. I actually have the opposite issue. Let's say procrastination. Let's say, you know, I can see that you would have that tend to procrastination. And does that give that person my eyebrows aren't going to necessarily change, but does that give me insight so that I can change that aspect of myself? Are things changeable, I guess, is what I'm talking.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not necessarily going to change everything. And I would never advocate trying it. And so it's always a case of helping people recognize what are the positives, what are the strengths, and start with that.
Right.
Because it's easy for most of us to see our weaknesses and flaws and all that stuff and be self-critical, and that doesn't really help. So it's to help people recognize, okay, these are the strengths you've got. This is the life experience you've got that's advantageous to you, regardless of what's going on. But this is the foundation you can work forward from. And these are the areas you need help with. Because again, so often when we're in that place of doubt and all of that, we don't see where we need help, and we see where we're stuck. So it's helping people to recognize, yeah, these are your strengths. This is the foundation. It's like you build a house on, but you need help with this or you need help with that. So it helps people to find a greater clarity of direction. And then they have more confidence in themselves going forward, because they're more in tune with their strengths, as well as knowing, okay, yeah, I know X who has that ability or has that skill, has that business. And also is to recognize none of us is an island. None of us really succeeds by ourselves anyway, no matter what we're doing in life. So it's to recognize, okay, yeah, if I collaborate or if I invest in this service, then that strengthens me. It also builds a relationship. So there's a whole win-win there. So it's helping people expand their vision rather than just see themselves as stuck or there's this one thing I want to do. So it's transcending what people perceive as their limitations. So really nobody has, if you like, an unfavorable set of features. It's more a case of recognizing the strengths, and everybody has them.
Wow, very incredible. Now, people are like, where do I start? So I know that you have a book and I want you to talk about the book, but I also know when you shared with me that you recently opened this up, not just from individual and corporations. And honestly, I've had Joseph come into my sales team, and it was one of the speakers that we came in that we all still talk about, because it's a very interesting topic, but it's so simple to grasp. But you've recently been, you're doing some work around masterminds. Like, can you share with the audience that are listening and viewing, like, what are the kind of ways that people can start to learn more about this?
Okay. Well, as you mentioned, there is my book. It's deliberately a very short book, a very simple book. It's practical. My intention in writing it was to give people a primer that was portable. Literally, you can take it around, carry around in the pocket or the briefcase or whatever. And it's taking people through like the practicalities, like six different forehead shapes, etc., eyebrows, noses, and giving visual examples. So that's a starting point. If people want it, they can get it through my website, or they can get a Kindle version. There are so many opportunities to learn, like free stuff on YouTube. I'm not talking about my stuff, but there's so many people putting free stuff out on YouTube. I can recommend other books. I don't do full scale training. I tend to do short training because that's just how I'm built. I have been asked about like setting up a face reading academy, but I don't have the patience for it. So I do shorter courses, so shorter courses with smaller groups, which is what works best for me. But that's probably not the best answer to your question. But
no, but it kind of reminds me of like a mastermind, right? So. Yeah. What's the name of your book, Joseph?
The book is called Face Facts, The Art of Reading Your Clients.
No, that's okay. I've written a number of books too. And they're what's the name of your next book? And I'm like, hang on, I got to look it up.
I got it. It's The Art of Reading Your Clients and Prospects for Sales, Negotiation, and Recruitment.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. Face Facts. That's the first page.
Facts. Yeah. And mastermind groups, so smaller groups.
Yeah, the masterminds are finished for the moment. We'll be starting a full-scale mastermind in probably in the autumn, and that'll be under the heading of communicate, trust, and collaborate. Because as I say, a lot of what I'm doing now is I've expanded a lot of my own thinking, and I've learned a lot myself on a personal and a professional level over the last couple of years, a lot of study. So I want to help people with really strengthening their communication, their ability to build trust, because that's so increasingly important in life and in business. It's like we know about the Great Resignation, and yes. So much of that is happening because there isn't trust in business. There isn't that respect. So I'm helping people to understand how to build trust both ways. And then how to build collaboration based on that. I'll be including other things like spotting deception, which I don't do in any of the short courses because it's a bigger topic in itself. So it's helping people with a much broader understanding of the nonverbals and how to communicate, how to present, how to interact, and build exceptional relationships.
I think you said something really key there, particularly for people that are in business. I know that, you know, my son, he's 18. He's starting a streetwear company. So just something completely not what you would think to do with communication. I'm just going to throw it as an example. We were sitting at a restaurant. It was his birthday. And I'm like, okay, you have a choice for your birthday gift. I'm not someone that gives a lot of tactile things. I give experiences. And I said, so let's go check out. I know he loves LA. I'm like, LA is probably where you're going to have your streetwear, or Vegas, because there's a lot of those people there. So you get a choice of where you want to go for your birthday. And the waiter was like, oh, hey, that's kind of cool. And I'm like, oh, we're doing it for his business. And the guy says to my 18-year-old son, so what's your business? And he's like, oh, yeah, it's cool. It's streetwear. And I'm, as an entrepreneurial parent, I'm dying inside. I'm hanging my head in shame. I have not done my son justice. I have not taught him anything. So after that experience, and I knew a friend of mine, and I was like, okay, we need to teach how to communicate. It doesn't matter what your topic. You don't have to be a public speaker to have to tap into being able to communicate what it is that you're looking for, being able to, and like you said, being able to make a decision on what that person's facial feature is telling you, so that when you deliver that information, it lands and impacts. And so when you talk about communication or speaking or doing your business or what have you, having that individual time with you, I think it's really critical, because it's delivering, not only is it delivering in a way that you land for people, which is what we want for us, but also what we want for them. I mean, this is not about, oh, I can find something out and be better at sales by being deceitful. Yeah. This is about being better at sales because the person heard you, because you have an insight into what makes it land for them. It's not, they're not going to buy your, you know, they're not going to buy Ocean's, you know, hoodies if they don't need a hoodie, no matter how much he knows that they, that their face says that they're more of a relationship person. Right. And But so when you talk about that communication, it just really triggered that picture for me around how useful it is. And honestly, for me, I'd much rather know who I'm talking to, because many of the sales things that we do is over Zoom. We don't get that visceral experience of being in communication anymore, of being able to get a sense of somebody, right? You get to have a picture with their background, right? So anyways, I just wanted to highlight to that just how important of a skill that it is, and go back to that sharpening our axe.
And even, sorry to cut across you there, but even in relation to the conversation with the son, with the waiter, I mean, that was an ideal opportunity, as you just referred to. But it's to recognize that pretty much every conversation has the potential for a relationship. And not only are you talking to the person, but you don't know who they may know, who may well be interested or could help you, or you could help them. And even with the, like, even in this digital age, and we're talking, you know, the advent of AI and all of that, so much still boils down to the human side of it, and the ability for humans to connect, communicate, and again, build relationship. And we can't underestimate how important that is and is going to be, particularly for the younger generation as well, because so many of them don't have the skills. Mm-hmm. And they obviously don't have the life experience, but so many don't have the skills, and so many of them are so caught up in this mm-hmm. that they're missing out on so many opportunities to connect and to have those really meaningful conversations. And they don't even have to be long conversations, but they're missing out on so many details and so many dimensions that could be so enriching for them.
I've said it for a long time that I actually said this probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And when I was thinking about what is going to be the next upcoming thing, and I actually went to the extent of contacting a friend of mine who was partly responsible for helping the first iPhone to being built. And I said, look, at what I think will be coming down the years to come, and who knows, Joseph, maybe we'll do something about this, is that, and honestly, it had to be a strong 4 or 5 years ago, is that because of what's going on in relationship to the breakdown of communication, just due to the fact that we're on our phones and how people feel from their phone and how it, you know, the dopamine and all that. I said, there's going to come a time where we're going to come back around and we're going to need something that's going to be able to turn that off. And so we got into this great big conversation, and I'm taking us down a little rabbit hole here, but we got into a conversation and I contacted my friend and I said, there must be some kind of technology that we can develop. Technology created this, so technology can fix it. That was my philosophy. Technology created it, so technology is going to fix it. And I said, can we create a modem or something? I'm probably letting out the best kept secret here. No one watched this show. No kidding. Is there a modem that we can create that actually literally shuts your phone down? I was thinking about the restaurants there's some restaurants that if you go in, you put all of the family puts their phone into a basket and they put the basket aside. You have your dinner and they will literally give you free dessert to do that. They'll take money off your bill, which I think is incredible. There should be something in Vancouver that picks up on that. But if you do that, and I thought, wouldn't that be kind of cool? So I said to him, I said, wouldn't that be a great thing for schools to purchase, something that would override their modem? And we literally started banging it off because they don't need their phones at school. If they need to be able to go turn it on, there might be something, or there's a school phone that they can use, you know? And he said, that's a great idea. We start banging off. He goes, but you can't control the waves. So if you were actually to shut off a phone, you can't control that. It's not going to shut off the businesses that are three blocks away and they're going to hate you. I'm like, this is more to be discovered. And I think we're seeing now so much exactly what you're talking about is the disconnect that happens without that communication, even for us that were raised in a generation. And, you know, you and I aren't necessarily 20 anymore. We're just a little older than that. For those of you that are listening, we're fantastic. For those of you that are watching, okay, we admit it. We have those skills, but it's easy to adapt to a new generation of new skills, and those kind of tend to go to the wayside. I remember the first wedding invitation I got by Facebook. I thought I was going to roll over. I was like, what? Like, you did just invite me to your wedding by Facebook? Yep. I'm going on a rant here, but I think that you are absolutely right. And how great that information is to be able to have, honestly, in every relationship. So yeah. There you go.
We do need to start very early. Like, there's a story a friend of mine told me. She had a son, 17 years old. This has gone back a few years ago now. And he was invited to a birthday party with his friends. And she drove him to the party, collected him afterwards. And he was really subdued when he got into the car. So she asked, what's wrong? Could you not enjoy yourself? And he said, no, it was terrible. A friend's mom, when we came in, she made us put all our phones in a basket in the hallway. And we had to go in the room and sit and talk to each other. And we didn't know how.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Isn't it interesting, the definition of a bad day for a teenager? Ooh. Okay. We can go down that road. Joseph, I think that it's clear, you know, clear sight communications. It's clear that your services, man, they just take it up a notch, don't they? They really, this is something that... I just think it's, as someone who teaches a lot around the formula of top performance, I mean, my bells and whistles are just going off. And what an edge that gives, and an insight, which is, I'm so glad that's part of your business name. How can people reach you? And then I have a really cool question for you.
Excellent. Yeah. The quickest way to reach me is on LinkedIn. It's where I'm most active. I do have a website, clearsightcommunications.com, but to be honest, I'm slow to update it, but LinkedIn is the best way to reach me.
Okay. Okay. So your name on LinkedIn is what?
It's just Joseph McGuire. If you look me up, I do have a Facebook page, but LinkedIn is really where I'm most active.
All right. So he's hanging out on LinkedIn. Yep. And we will have that information obviously in the show notes. Absolutely. You can reach out to us anytime. So all that said, you know, I'm going to be in your wonderful country very soon, actually, in August 2023. And this morning, as I was thinking about how I might need a little break, I was like, I wonder if I can go to Ireland before I go. That might be fun. So I was actually thinking about that today. I was missing Listenvarna this morning. Oh, I have such a heart for Listenvarna. Anyways, long story short, I will be there, and myself and my colleague are going to be walking across your beautiful country to raise money for the music industry. And I have such... For me, music is just like breathing. I have to ask you, you're on your way to a desert island. You're going by yourself and you have room for one album. You have one, and the kids would call it vinyl. You got room for one vinyl.
Yeah, I remember vinyl. Oh, yeah.
Okay, what would you take, my friend?
Oh, gosh. I know it'd be pretty quiet on the desert island, wouldn't it? So, I'd need something a bit more upbeat. So I'd probably go for Bill Frisell, Gone Just Like a Train.
Bill Frisell, Gone Just Like a Train?
Just Like a Train, yeah.
Just Like a Train. Okay, so I haven't heard that, so I'm going to have to look that one up. And thank you for the new music to listen to. As always, it's such a pleasure and it's so insightful. Is there anything that you want to share with our audience before we say our goodbyes?
Yeah, just remember to smile. And I'm not being silly with that. I know I'm not smiling as I'm saying it, but a smile sells. A smile communicates so much. It opens doors. It helps others to relax around us. So the more truly we can smile, and remember to include the eyes as well, not just the mouth, but the more we smile, the more it opens so many doors. Very simple.
Fantastic. Well, that I think we can all do. So thank you so much, as always, coming onto the show. Just a pleasure. And I know that we'll be talking very, very soon as we do. You have just made your way into my circle. I just can't believe I forgot about your gifts and your skills, my friend. It could have saved me something there. Will, it would have. So anyways, we will talk again very soon. Thank you for coming on. And for those of you that are listening, please, as you do, you incredible audience, you share, send this, you know, you've heard it, you've gotten value from it. Please send it and share it to whomever you think it would land for. And if you feel like you would make a great host, you've got something to share, you took on a mission, you're hanging in there on the mission, or the mission's changing, whatever that looks like for you, we would love to hear from you all the way through the generations. So if you're 17 or 18 and you think you've got something to tell us and teach us, well then get yourself on this show, reach out, we'd love to have you. And until then, have an incredible day, and we'll see you soon.